Welcome to the Time Out Podcast with Tony McGettigan, because we all need a little time out from life.
Hello and welcome to episode 80. Yes, episode number 80 of the Time Out Podcast with me, your host, Tony McGettigan. And when I started this podcast almost 4 years ago, little did I think I'd reach 80 episodes. A massive thanks to you, the listeners, for listening in at any point. Your listenership, along with your feedback, etc., gives me that extra nudge to keep going, doing something that I love. And before I get on to my guest today, I just want to say I hope that you're all enjoying the summer so far. It's been mixed weather. We've had a good few weeks in the past month, but it's on the change now. But hopefully coming in now to July and August, we can see a bit more warmer weather. On to my guest today, and I'm recording here in beautiful Sandfield Ardra at the Pitch and Putt course, owned now by Michael Alsop and his family. Michael in recent years bought this much loved and much visited piece of property from Tom Finn, a Galway man who sadly passed away 2 years ago. His anniversary would have been June 28th, 2 years since Tom passed. And during this podcast with my guest today, we'll be paying homage to Tom, as well as looking at all the history of the course and the changes made to the course over the years, and some of the best scorers and some of the famous faces that have stopped by. And someone once described this course as the St Andrews of the pitch and putt world, and that's definitely a great thing to be likened to. So without further ado, I have to say, Michael Alsop, you're very welcome to the Time Out Podcast.
Thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to be here and share some of the secrets and the things of Sandfield with you.
Yeah, it's really lovely to be here, Michael. It's a place I absolutely have loved coming to for years. And the first question I'm going to ask you is, how are you keeping?
Well, I'm keeping well, very busy. One of the things about Sandfield is, you know, the pitch and putt, there's never a dull moment. You've always got plenty to do, and nature takes its course, and we fire on. So it's a relentless task, getting the course up and then, you know, keeping it in good condition. And that's something that, you know, I've certainly been aware of, that the history of the course, and that the standards that's expected. And, you know, it's a challenge, but it's a nice challenge, and it's really rewarding to be able to do it.
Yeah, it certainly must be, Michael. And we're going to get on to your plans for the course, the history of the course, and much more. But the first thing I'm going to ask you is, like, where you're from and, like, how you ended up coming here to buy this piece of property.
Well, obviously, as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm not from round here. Blowing from a worksop or a little mining village called Cartley and Lindrick, Nottinghamshire, in Worksop. I was born only child of my father and mother, Samuel and Nora. My dad was a carpenter at the pit at Firbeck, and we lived in, you know, a mining village. Now, in terms of coming here, I met my wife, who's from Ardra, and Noreen, from the Cunninghams, down at Storm Hill. And we met in Gibraltar in 2000, ended up getting married down there in 2002. Got two wonderful children, Samuel and Aoife, who were 18 and 16, respectively. And ended up coming back to Ardra in 2006 for a couple of years. Then we went off to Malaga again, working away, and then came back in 2011. And that's basically how I'm back here, and we, you know, back with the extended family on Noreen's side. Being an only child, I ended up bringing my mother here. My dad unfortunately passed away when I was 18, and unfortunately, you know, he was only 48. So yeah, this is why I'm here, and why,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's a great story, and I'm sorry to hear about your father as well, Michael. Yeah,
it was a good man. I mean, it was sad. He was only 48, and you know, it sort of the best time of his life has been missed, and it's been nice for him to see what I'm doing, although I'm sure he probably does keep an eye on what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he's very proud of you, looking down, Michael. I have no doubt about that. And, you know, another man that was very well known and loved about here as well was Tom Finn, a Galway man who had this course before yourself. And before we get on to actually talk about Tom and the great impact he had on this course for nigh on 20 years, talk to me about the lead up to you actually purchasing this course.
Okay, yeah, I mean, obviously this was back in 2020, the course went up for sale in the November, and I'd not originally saw it, but I think in probably early on in 2021, we were coming back during COVID and lockdown, and I thought, I don't know what the kilometres were, but me and the wife were taking the dog for a walk, been out to Nyarn on the beach and what have you, and then as we were driving back, we saw the sign up on outside the pitch and putt for sale, and I said to Noreen, you know, pitch and putts for sale. That might be an interesting retirement project in a few years' time. But, you know, time and place, you can't sort of put those things off. So, you know, I was a couple of years short, or two or three years short of probably finishing my other job. So we looked at it, and we came and spoke to Tom and the estate agent and what have you. And for me, it was looking forward, it was a challenge. It was something, you know, I would hate to be sat doing nothing. So this seemed really a nice thing. And we knew of Sandfield, obviously, with our draft connections for the family. All family had played up here, the new Tom and everything. So, you know, to be part of that and to continue, you know, the legacy of Sandfield on was something that struck me as being something, you know, I'd like to take on. And we just pursued it down, and hey presto, we bought it.
Yeah, well, certainly glad you did. You know, to keep on the story of this great course, and obviously Tom Finn, who we just mentioned in the introduction there, Michael, who sadly passed away 2 years ago, just a number of days ago. It would have been the second anniversary of his passing. Tom was a great character, who I met many, many times over here when we'd be playing massive into GA, in particular hurling, and a massive Galway man. And he'd be cutting the grass and checking out, asking, do we know the scores in the games? And he'd be listening then to probably Radio 1 or one of the channels on the earpiece as he was cutting the grass. So he was definitely a much-loved character, Tom.
He certainly was, and that was obvious. You know, we knew Tom, and as a family, Cunningham family knew Tom, you know, from coming up here with the boys and everything and their children. But, you know, just the feedback from people talking about Tom, you know, ultimately, when we opened in May 2021, Tom was trying to get the course open, but, you know, his health was failing. So he just said to us, you know, I know you're going to buy it, get on and open it. So we did that, and we got on for the bank holiday weekend. But I think, you know, we found ourselves breaking the news about Tom after he passed. And just the sadness, but people's memories as well. And I think the word that stuck out, it was a gentleman.
Definitely.
And the number of people that it was a gentleman. And the other one was, he was great with the kids.
Yes.
He took time with the children that were here and the kids, and, you know, saw them growing up, and, you know, he was, his tenure was best part of nearly 20 years. So, you know, a whole generation of kids growing up, and, you know, that was one of the big things that people kept coming back to us with and saying, and, you know, what a nice man he was, what a gentleman he was, and how good he was with the children. So, yeah, and, you know, a hard act to follow.
Definitely so, but I have no doubt, Michael, that you're yourself, I can see from yourself and your family that you have full intention to do Tom and a lot of other people proud, and I definitely wish you the best of luck with that. And of course, just want to say as well, mate, Tom, rest in peace. Going back before we get on to your plans for the course that you want to, we'll talk about, Michael, I just want to talk about something that's also very interesting, is the very initial history of this great piece of property here in Sandfield. And that is the fact that it was a piece of property bought originally by Sean Connerton in 1983.
That's right. Sean was, as the story goes, an ex-guard from Dublin, and moved back up here, retired up here. And as trying to find out about it, I mean, it's one of the things that, you know, I would like to do is get to know more about the history. There's very few photographs. I've got no paper cuttings of its opening or anything like that. It's just odd people have said things, you know. But this, as the story goes, Sean bought a piece of land up here, and with a wheelbarrow and a shovel, dug out the first nine holes in the landscape, and what makes Sandfield so special. I think it took him, I don't know whether the 3 years, I've had 3 years quoted, whether that was the first nine or whether that was the full 18, but he went and bought some more land, I believe, and then did the remaining 18, nine holes to make the 18 up, and is the course as you see it today. So, you know, but what strikes me is the vision and the inspiration that he must have seen to look at this piece of land and say, oh, I think a piece of pitch and putt course might do well here. And I'm sure, you know, that there were some skeptics around that at that time. But, you know, I have one photo from his son that he kindly gave me, a Niall, of Sean outside a wee cabin with a big waste bin and holding a putting club. And, you know, what I would ask of your listeners, that if anybody has any information about the origins of Sandfield or any history or any photographs of the course for the last 30 years, I would love to be able to get some of that information, and if we can get some photos, because what I'd like to do is put on the website a history page, because I think it's really important to pay tribute to both Sean Connerton and Tom Finn for what they've done and what they've provided the community with here. The legacy is fantastic. Hopefully we can add to it, but I'd really like to pay respect to them by creating that page.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic, Michael. It is really great to hear your intention there. And as Michael said there, folks, if anybody listening to this podcast can help Michael, please get in touch with him. There's numerous ways to do so. They have an email address. You can just tell people what it is, Michael.
Yeah, sandfieldpitchandput@gmail.com. So that's the full sand field pitch and put ANDPUTT at gmail.com.
Yeah, you know, you're on the likes of Instagram, and you're keeping the page active there, and that's all important too in terms of keeping the place in the public mind. And to just remind people of the numbers there as well to contact you, Michael.
Yeah, so on the mobile is 087 161 4343. You can find us on the website, which is sandfieldpitchandput.ie. And we're on Instagram and Facebook at Sandfield Pitch and Putt.
Yeah, so no shortage of places to find Michael and his family there for this great business they're running here in Sandfield. And that's very important as well, you know, to give people that facility to be able to come here locally and just chill out for an hour and a half, or whatever it may be, with the family. It's a nice, critical, I would say, thing to have in the area as well. Sean Connerton, when you think of it, you know, you mentioned there the amount of work that he did at the beginning, but it is quite amazing, really. Like, in 1983, that he would have bought the property, but fast forward 3 years, he would have opened it. I can't imagine the amount of work that Sean must have done.
Yeah, I mean, just on the things that we're doing that we'll probably touch on, you know, I've got the benefit of having people coming in and using diggers and things like that to build this with a wheelbarrow and a shovel and what have you. And that is the true story. There was no great machinery here, so this was hard labour. But from what I've been told about him, that was his that was his thing. And if I can just make a quick call out to his wife, who still lives in Sandfield down here, Moira Connerton. And after we bought the place, she walked up from home and came up to the pitch and putt and wished us well and gave me two T-shirts. As you see, we're in here with the old logo on, which was really nice and really kind. And if I can sort of move just a bit further than that, just to mention everybody in Sandfield, the support's been fantastic. And without that support, you know, it'd be very difficult. So I really, you know, I call out to everybody in Sandfield for their best wishes, their kindness, their support. And just on the day-to-day things, it's been really, really helpful.
Yeah, everyone plays a part, basically.
Yeah.
And definitely good to hear that is the case, Michael. Then just for people who maybe are wondering what happened then, obviously Sean would have had the course up until 2002, and that's when Tom Finn came in then, and Tom had it just up until 2021, and then of course it's on to Michael and his family since. And you know, you have some very exciting plans. Michael, I was talking to you here in the lead up to this interview, and you have some very exciting plans for the future of this course.
Yeah, I think what you know, you could come here, and it is such a unique place, and you could sit and just leave it and maintain it as it is. But one of the things that I've always wanted to do is add to the legacy. You know, it'd be nice that we can add to the facilities here. Firstly, on the pitch and putt. You know, for anybody that's been this year, we're in what I would call transition year, or it might turn into two transition years. We've purchased the hill round the lake, Morgan's Lock, where we're going to create three new holes and a new tee that comes back from off the hill bound to the 12th green. The reason for doing that is as much to extend the car park. It'll allow us to extend the car park. One of the constraints very much is the car parking. I think if everybody parked really nicely, we could get 16 cars in here, but I would say 14's a real max, and at times a lot less. Now, you know, through the year, in the peak holiday times, we can find cars parked on the road, and as I say, that's not necessarily good, particularly when it's good. So one of the priorities is to extend the car park. The other would be to probably improve the cabin facilities and maybe add some cafe facilities that you know, so people can sit out and you know, have a tea or a coffee after the game. So that's part of it. So the creation of those new halls, which hopefully will be at some point next year, although we will start this year, will be to free up that land, and then maybe over this next winter we can do the car park. With a longer view, and you know, this is a little bit of a dream, is the creation of those three halls allows us to remove three halls, and that would be, and people might now jump up and start shouting, would be one, which is a fairly favourite hole, 2 and 18. So 18 certainly allows us to do the car park. 1 and 2, though, clears the bottom field up. And what our vision is for that is to maybe create an AstroTurf adventure golf, like a mini golf, 18-hole course, to just extend the facilities to, you know, for other families. You know, a staple of anybody's holiday, stay at home holiday, or a holiday in your own country or from the UK, is a game of mini golf. And if I call it mini golf, then people probably know what I'm talking about. And that's the dream. That would be a real step forward. We really have to look at that very, very closely and just see that we can do that. And obviously everything that goes with it in terms of planning and that. But that ultimately is the long-term vision. So we see change, but hopefully good change. We don't want to change the way the pitch and putt is at all. The three holes we'll create will add new challenges. And keep with the mantra that no two holes are the same at Sandfield.
Yeah, that's very true. And I'm very, first of all, I would say I'm excited by the prospect of what you've just said there, Michael. And I know, I suppose, a lot of us can be, I suppose we don't jump on to the idea of change quickly, but I think it definitely sounds like something that could work very favourably.
I hope so, and would create something unique in the Northwest. You know, there are small mini golf courses around, I think down at Bundoran and odd places on the coast, the holiday resorts. But I think something that could be a real game changer for tourism, and hopefully, you know, a feature. And probably the real long-term aim would be whether we could get the World Adventure Golf Tour here.
Yeah.
to play it. So that would be a real dream. But, you know, you have to have them ambitions. Yeah. But in the short term, the aim is just to provide a more people that can't play or don't feel they can play pitch and putt. You know, everybody can play putting.
Yeah,
and that would be, you know, for a lot of families that are here through the summer, as well as, you know, everybody locally.
Yeah,
I'm sure it would be, you know, a new attraction that would be well supported as the pitch and putt is now.
Yeah, it would basically open up a lot of other possibilities to people in terms of looking at it. And I know even, for example, take St Andrews itself, the famous Lynx course, the old course in Scotland, like off the, I think it's off the 18th hole. I've not been there now, but I do plan to go there. But I've heard off the 18th, there's actually a putting facility there for people. So, you know, it's a bit like Sean Connerton, you know, and Tom, who've had their own ideas on this course. You're trying to implement your own vision as well, Michael, and I think that's important, considering, you know, we're in both more modern times now.
Yeah, I think so. And as I say, for me, I'd like to add to this facility. I'd like to add, you know, to the legacy of Sandfield Pitch Up. But it's already on the map. But, you know, if we can make it even more popular and, you know, a great sort of service to the local community and the tourists, the regular tourists that come, you know, give them something else to do. The other thing with mini golf, it's a little bit more weatherproof.
Yeah,
whereas the pitch and putt obviously is limited by the amount of rain and, you know, and that sort of thing. I think sort of just trudging around a wee mini golf would be a little bit more sustainable for some people.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, it definitely opens up, I think, possibilities in terms of new custom, in terms of people that would come here. Maybe it's less physically challenging for people that are limited in their mobility. So I definitely like your ideas, Michael, and I would like to wish you all the best with that with those plans. In terms of competitions, you know, the first thing, there's a lot of competitive people, I'm sure, that hopefully will be listening to this podcast, Michael. Do you have any competitions that you run?
We don't at the minute, but that obviously is on the roadmap. I think once we get the new course done on the pitch and putt and the new holes and the new layouts, the aim would be to have an annual open competition with lots of different prizes for you know, obviously top man, top woman, but maybe, you know, top junior. And also for me, what would be important, that if it wasn't somebody within a local area radius, we'd have a top local winner as well. So that there's lots to go at and lots of people to play. So that would be an open competition, whether it be over one day or over 2 days or two rounds, you know, finding a slot in the season, probably June after the exams and schools have closed, because what we don't want to exclude is all the local school kids that come and support us as well. So give them chance to take part in a competition. So that's definitely on the roadmap, and we'd really like to do that and make it an annual thing. So that we, good. You know.
Yeah, that would definitely another thing that would be received very well. I know Tom used to have the odd competition here, and it was always went down well. And scoring records, I'm sure Tom would have probably filled you in on that. And then you have your own story as well, Michael. What's the story there for anyone that's listening to this that might be thinking, I'll make the trip over here?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sandfield, you know, really is, it's a short game challenge. There was a story, Tom did tell me a story of I think some people from Asia that came over to play the pitch and putt at one time, and there was supposedly a score of 43 recorded, which would be
11 under,
which is some going, and I suspect there was some professionalism in there as well. But saying that, 11 under, we have something on the website that we, in the last 2 years, we've had 47s recorded by local people.
Right.
So, you know, and that's 7 under. So, you know, we've called this a magnificent 7 under club.
Yeah.
And put that on the website, and anybody that does that. Although what we have the leaderboard up, and if anybody wants to submit a card that is under par, then we put that up, and we put it on the website, and we put it on our social media as well. So, you know, people get recognised for doing good scores. This year's, we've just had the first card put on the board 52, so two under par, and you know, it's good for people just to be able to challenge to do that. But you know, at the end of the day, whatever your score is, and the main thing is to try and better the last score.
That is the main objective. And you know, you talked to me there in the pre-interview, Michael, as well, that the great thing about the Pitching Pot here, it's open to all ages, and it's a great family way of spending an hour or two. You've had two, is it 7 year olds that have had holes in one here?
Yeah, this year the 7 year olds are showing the way. I think we've recorded 10 up to now this season, and again we put all the hole in ones that people come in and put their names on the website. But yeah, we're two 7 year olds. What first one was a young girl that aced the second hole. For those people that know it would not be easy to do. And then the second one was a young fella that managed to ace the 16th, which equally, again, is not an easy hole to get.
Yeah, well, it's not two holes that jump out at me in terms of being easy to hit a hole-in-one, so that's impressive.
Yep, yeah. He sure is. And but this is the thing. It's so nice that young people, you know, we have families bringing, you know, their 4, 5, 6, 7 year olds. I would say 6 is a sort of a base age that people come around. But at the same time, you know, you have other people coming and saying the challenge is a real challenge. We had two people from down the country that were regular pitch and putters last year, and after the end of their round, they came back into the cabin and was talking to my wife, and I think the comment was, we thought we were good at pitch and put until we played here. So, you know, it's an enigma in the sense that a six-year-old can play and a seven-year-old can get a hole in one, but at the same time, regular pitch and putters come here and say it's a challenging course, it's a short game that you don't get anywhere else, and you know, we need to maintain that.
Yeah, that is a nice feature to be able to have your own distinction as a course. And you know, I'm sure as you're the length you've been here, Michael, so far, you'll always get feedback in terms of the public's favourite holes. You know, that's something that I suppose that's open to just your own preference and that. But I know myself, I would find it probably, I haven't actually thought this through, but there's a lot of holes to choose from that I quite like playing. So I'm sure they're like everything, though, the people that come here have their own favourite holes.
Yeah, it's something, again, getting feedback from people is really important, I think. And we put a poll on the website, and out of that poll there was a clear winner, and it was the 14th hole, which is the one that's from high up down, you know, down to the bottom there. And 33% of people that voted for 14. The other two standouts was holes 17 and hole 1. And looking at those, you know, 17 had 14% and hole 1 had 11%. And when you look at those holes, the only really comment, they are on the shorter side. They are from high up to low down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things that in my mind, and I've already touched on, that maybe we lose 1 and 2, which saves a big walk up from 2, actually. Yeah. But there will be people that upset. But what I'm thinking of this high to low is that we'll have a really nice hole that would go to the 12th green from high up on the hill. A little bit longer than those we've quoted about, but hopefully would be a really nice challenging hole that goes over the drain and to a big green. You know, it's one of the things. But that they're the ones. Everything else was a little bit, you know, more or less the same percentages that everybody voted for.
Yeah, 14 is a nice hole. And I would have to say, just thinking about it, that 15, I like 15 as the fact that, you know, if you play the shot right, you have a chance of wherever the pin is situated of getting that ace. It's another one of them holes that, you know, you can play to the, not so easy done now. I haven't aced that. Yeah. I would like to ace it now, but not so easy done.
It's doable. And the talking point is the ridge in front of the green. It's sort of a reverse bunker in the sense that it's a raised area that if you're that bit short, it catches you and throws you backwards, you know, and just getting over that is the key thing. The green itself is lovely green, sloping from, you know, back to front, and depends where we put the pins as well. We can either be kind or we can...
some of the pins can determine the likelihood of an ace or not, but another a great hole. But It's a hard question. It's like asking you to pick from your favourite child, Michael, yeah. to ask you your own favourite hole.
My own favourite hole, I like 15, I have to say. But I think probably what just will cap it, and we're rebuilding it at the minute, will be 8. It's got some distant challenges. It's got the drop between.
Yeah.
My son called it the Hooge Crater, which is in Belgium,
yes.
and the Menin Road, and it just struck me the road running across it, and then the green itself looks as though it's one of these craters built up. So that one I like, but so 15 as well probably is an interesting one, as well as 14. I think everybody loves 14.
Yeah, 14 when you can play the ball it's a lovely hole indeed. Famous names to have played the course. Now, I know myself years ago, as I think I've told you this, that I met Seamus Coleman here, an absolute gentleman and a regular visitor to the place, Michael, but yourself, other names that have come here, I'm sure you've seen Seamus here yourself.
Yeah, Seamus, obviously, really good, and bearing in mind that myself and my son are big Everton fans, having Seamus come is fantastic, and such a nice man, an unassuming man that's got time for you, he'll talk to you, he'll have his picture taken, and you know, so it's really good that we have somebody like that, and there's other people that we've seen over time, Desi Farrell. Would come. I mean, he's got local connections, and so would come with his
Glen Clonkill, is it?
Yes, I think it is. He was up last year and with his family. Rory Best would be another visitor,
the rugby player. Yeah,
yeah, that's a rugby player. And we had Melissa Reddy off Sky Sports came last year as well. I believe she posted on her Instagram or something that, you know, some photos from around the coast. So, I'm sure there's some that we've missed, and there might be people that slip in and out because my recognition of people at Lance is not fantastic. And I rely on somebody else saying, hey, that's so-and-so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. A lot of the time we mightn't, you know, there's a lot of famous people out there now at the minute that would be classed as famous that I myself wouldn't recognise, you know.
Yeah, but, it is nice that you have names, people that, you know, and nice people as well, unassuming people that understand this place and that it's local and it's traditional. And so it's really, it's nice.
You never know who's about, really and truly, you know, and just because they're not might be as much in the public eye, they could still have a famous, you know, story of some kind. And, you know, funny core stories, Michael. Is there anything that springs to mind here when it comes to that one?
There's one. That's the question that I was really struggling for, because, you know, I mean, it's only the people that make the funny stories. They'll come and tell you about different things. But what we got in the first year here was people, a couple, it didn't happen just once, it happened about three times. Guys came back and said, a fox came on and pinched my ball. And when we dug into this, apparently there was a fox that was living around and about, and it's not that he was just picking balls off anywhere. These were good shots that were landing on the 12th green, and all of a sudden the fox had run out, picked the ball up off the green and shoot off somewhere and whatever it was. And we got about three reports of this fox being seen. And I can remember being on outside the cabin and on the top there, and this pair of foxes were walking along two and just looked at me and thinking, who's that and where I'm, and just sauntered off down the course. Now, unfortunately, the year after, I did find a dead fox on the course. So I don't know if it's the same one. We've not had that same reported, but now whether he died of choking on golf balls or not, I don't
know. He might have been a collector of golf balls, Michael.
We nearly had to put a rule out, because we had somebody come and say, well, what happens when you hit a shot and it's 2 foot from the hole and a fox comes and picks it up? And I'm thinking, well, there's an interesting rule to create, you know.
Retrieving it might be tricky, yeah.
You wouldn't be able to say, go find it.
No.
And saying, mark it where you thought it was, might be, playing partners might not do it. So I think we came back, you'd have to play it again. So
playing the ball at the legs would be tricky in that scenario.
It sure would. So I would say that's the funniest story that we, you know, the strange occurrence, shall we say, but that would be it.
maybe somebody from Asia had was controlling this fox to to prevent their great scorer from being beaten.
You never know. But certainly one of those strange things that happens. And we're very in the midst of nature here. So for good and for bad, there's some stories to be told.
Yeah, definitely so. And as well, forgive me, Michael, because you just dwelled there on Everton, and I want to touch just before we move on to more core stuff. Obviously, you talked about Seamus Coleman. What a season for Everton again. Such a difficult season, and obviously Sean Dyche came in and steadied the ship and got you over the line, and it was looking very bleak for one stage at Everton, for Everton.
It was, and I think there's a lot of the fan base. I mean, let me just say this: I've never known such a great fan base. We're season ticket holders. We don't get to every game, but we're looking forward to Bramley Moor Dock coming along, and hope it will be a Premiership league ground rather than a Championship one. But things are tough, and it's been, it's been a bad few years. But I have to say, the game that saved us last season wasn't necessarily the last one, although we did have to win that one against Bournemouth, but the game away at Brighton, and where that performance came from, and certainly I think was a game changer. We'll go into this next season, we'll see. I mean, this financial fair play thing's kicking about and all sorts, and there doesn't seem a lot of money to spend, and we'll see where we go. One thing I was really surprised about was that we didn't take Connor Cody for $4.5 million, which we had on the back of the loan as option to buy. Such a character, such a leader, and loved being back in Liverpool. I found that a little bit strange, and I think there's reports he's going $7.5 million to Leicester or somewhere, I forget where it is. I think it's Leicester.
Yeah.
So, but we're forever hopeful. And being Everton fans, we know what we're in for. And my son, I think the only thing is that at times I don't know whether I did my son any favours in introducing him to Everton and the club. But once you get bitten, you're there. Although if I can just give Samuel a plug, he has his own YouTube channel.
Yes.
Same Old Everton, and has a good following, and every time we go to the game he'll be getting recognised by people and saying, "Oh, you and so that's good for him. And it's tough being an Everton fan at the minute.
It is, but at the same time you wouldn't change it, Michael. And
no.
You mentioned that result against Brighton. Being a United fan myself, I think that was just after they had beaten us at Brighton, and a late goal penalty. So to achieve that result to safety was hugely impressive. And that last game of the season, the victory against Bournemouth, that I'm imagining that last 20 minutes must have seemed like 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, we were at the game and the ground was rocking. We know it's noisy, but before the game and as the game kicked off, the noise was phenomenal. As the game went on, we got to half time. I think it started getting nervy then. Leicester were in front, we were drawing. And then when we got the goal, you'd think there'd be a sense of release, but I think it probably heightened the tension, because we knew then, from then to the end of the game, one goal for Bournemouth, and we're back where we started. Yeah. So, until we got to the end, then, and great relief. And I think it was relief. You're not celebrating staying up. It was just a relief, and you're glad that Everton's got another season in the Premiership, simply because the history, the heritage. It's a little bit, probably we were all struck on history and heritage here, because that's what Sanfield is.
Yeah. Definitely, it definitely is. It's important to the area, and it's more than just a course in so many ways. And just before I move on, Seamus Coleman, the leader that he's been for Everton, I think I saw somewhere recently where he's a couple of games away from breaking the record of Premier League appearances for Everton. What a captain he's been for Everton, considering, and a player, considering that he cost, was it 80,000 or 50,000 from Sligo Rovers?
Well, as the song goes, 60 grand, 60 grand, Seamus Coleman. And that's, Seamus is phenomenal, because he has had, over time, been touted, and there was talk of Bayern Munich and talk of Manchester United even. I think that, you know, he might have gone to, but he's, you know, he's brought into Everton, he's stuck with Everton, and I think Everton are doing right, you know. Although let me say this, I think his season last season was fantastic.
Yeah,
I think without Seamus we would have been even in worse position, you know. Just the overall thing, but you know, the goal against Leeds and things like that. So, you know, and long may Seamus stay, you know, and hopefully there's a job there for him to bring the youth through and training and coaching and stuff, you know, once he does hang his boots up. But big thanks and a shout out to Seamus for sure.
Yeah. It's better he's getting, even with age, and you know, when you consider for Ireland as well, he's definitely had quite a career. And it would have been easy, I suppose. I'm sure when David Moyes went to United, I'm sure like obviously it was mentioned, Leighton Baines and Seamus Coleman were mentioned. Obviously we got Marwyn Flaney, but it didn't happen with Coleman, and that just shows you, like, he's going to go on now to become an icon at Everton, and that wouldn't have happened if he left for United.
He deserves all the accolades that he gets, and you know, and I don't think you could give enough praise to him, to be honest. I really don't, you know.
Yeah. Coming back from such a bad injury as well a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and just to see his reaction when people perform bad tackles, you can see that, you know, he's been on the wrong end of that, you know. And unfortunately there's some other Everton players that have had bad injuries, you know. Ben Godfrey, and you look at Ben Godfrey this year, and there's an edge off him. I think his injury is you know, it was a bad injury again, and a break, and but you know, he doesn't seem to have the same pace, and he, you know, I don't know, but you know, he's in the right place, because I'm sure Seamus has given him all the advice and all the support that you'd need to get. So, you know, as I say, full credit to Seamus, absolutely.
Definitely, and we wish all the best going forward as well, Everton, and hopefully it won't be as nerve-wracking next season, I'm hoping for you, Michael. And you know, when the court has opened, Michael, it's obviously with seasonal, it's opened in the spring through to, is it September?
Yeah, that's right. We aim each year, and I think this is just keeping the traditions up, that we try and get Sandfield pitching put open for Easter. Unfortunately, we failed this year, which is really disappointing. I hate failure, and but you know, we had such, it never stopped raining from October through to the end of March, and March was on the wettest on record. And for anybody that knows Sandfield, you know, water's always a problem.
Yeah.
It can soon get waterlogged. So we tried to do things around drainage and work, and actually we pulled the drain out that runs from the lock down to under the road. And over the winter, the lake dropped about a foot.
Right.
So where 12th tee at one time a day could be underwater when we had lots of rain, that's well down now. So, you know, hopefully that's worked.
Mm-hmm.
But just getting machinery on or getting things done on was so difficult. And then this year, you know, we the other thing that you know, as I say, with Tom, must have had all these tips and tricks and everything like that, and so it was a big loss when he passed. That, you know, we you know, there was so much knowledge that we wanted to gain from him. So, you know, I'm not a horticulturist, Tom was. So I'm hitting this as we go, and doing the best that we can and trying to learn things. But you know, there's things like the there's been a big problem this year is the leather jackets, which is the crane fly grub, and they lay their eggs under in sandy areas. So of course, Sandfield, there's lots. But if you look around, even the big golf courses at Nairn and people's gardens, you can even see these grey browny patches where these grubs just eat the grass roots.
Yes.
And I can remember 2 years ago, actually, after the first season, I was putting a fork in a green down at 12, actually, and it came up like a carpet.
Right.
The whole lot of grass roots had just been eaten away, and it was all dying. So it's a real problem, and they banned the spray that controlled them, so that they're on the up, and if they have good seasons, then it's a real problem. But I know it's been a problem everywhere. So this year, they were there in numbers. And then our other animal story is that we have badgers on the course.
Yeah.
Come on. And while it's really soft, they dig for the grubs. And usually they dig around the greens. But this winter, they decided to go on the greens because they were that soft. So we actually had five greens dug up, which we are now reseeding and rebuilding and doing. So we still have a couple of temporary greens on the go at the minute. But, you know, these are the challenges. And this is what you... Well, I don't know whether you realise when you take these things on. But, you know, nature throws you That's everything. It. Yeah. And then even if you look at the weather this year... We went from waterlogged conditions to drought.
That's right.
You know, 3-4 weeks of no rain whatsoever, and you know, they're declaring drought. So you know, you're forever fighting that. That's part of the challenge of keeping something like this and presenting it in its best possible form. Yeah. And that's so important to us. You know, it's so important to me that the course is shown in its best light. Cannot always do it.
No, that's it.
But it, you know, that's the aim.
It's an ongoing challenge, basically. And but it's a challenge that you've definitely met face on. The cost to play here, Michael, for someone that's listening to this that might be considering coming for the first time, just to let people know of like club hire and, you know, that's all available here as well.
Yep. I mean, we've kept the same prices since 2021 when we took it on. An adult round is what we did was actually separate the club hire and the whole thing, because a lot of people do come with their own clubs. So it's €7 for an adult round and €5 for a student, whether that's a comp student or second year student or even a third year.
That's reasonable. Very reasonable.
So, you know, you can play for fiver if you've got your own clubs. The club hire is the only thing that's changed is it's a euro per club. You know, some people have a putter or have a wedge and want that, but €2. So you're talking for an adult €9 if you're having to hire clubs, and for a student €7. And then golf balls were €1 a piece, and they've not changed over time, even though, you know, the buying costs of those sorts of things because of COVID got a lot more difficult and have been challenging as well. So we try and keep this at a level, you know, you don't want to price people out of coming.
Well, it's definitely very reasonable prices, I think, you know.
I think so, you know, an hour and a half's entertainment for a tenner or thereabouts is not, you know, as well as the benefits of being out in the fresh air and the exercise that you get going around as well.
That's it. There's so many pluses to it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you've also got a loyalty system going here, Michael, where if you play so many rounds, you get a round free.
Yeah, it's something we wanted to do to reward those people that come back on a regular basis. So we have loyalty cards, and you pay for 5 full rounds and you get a full round, the 6th round free. So it's about a 20% discount if you come on a regular basis. So really targeted at people that come regular, you know, and support us. So we just like to give something back. The other thing we introduced this year was... what I call scruffy ball buckets. Golf balls are always a contentious thing in terms of they do get lost around here. So to reduce the cost for big groups and families, we introduce these buckets of 12 balls. They're perfectly round. They just have the logos a bit scruffed off. And €8. So, you know, again, just something else to try and give something back.
That's right, good idea, Michael. And again, it's kind of, it will, I'm sure people will appreciate that. And I know I'm 2 rounds into the 5 myself, Michael, so I'm counting down the 3 to the free round.
Very good. Yeah, you're good. Yeah, do you get an extra stamp for coming today and doing this interview, I think?
I think I'll be looking for one for that, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Just mentioning as well, and you know, I know it's a different kind of a kettle of fish, but golf generally, I know it's a different game to pitch and putt, but do you have an interest in golf yourself, Michael, and have you actually played much?
I used to go and play the municipal courses when I was back in the UK, occasionally. And it's always been something that I've been half decent at, and I think that's probably the story of my life, sporting wise. Is, you know, I've been reasonably good at some things. I'm a lefty as well, so yeah, didn't play a lot. Although the story there would be that in 2020, just in the midst of COVID, obviously. I decided to buy myself a full set of left-handed clubs with a view that I'll go and play some more golf and joined down at Donegal at Merva, because I actually met a man down there when I was playing who was from Bolsover in Derbyshire, which was just down the road from where we live. So we had something in common. We were both Florians. He was from Mount, or he's from Mount Charles. So I was playing down there, joined the first season, then renewed second season, 2021. But of course, we bought this.
Yes.
And never got to play. Okay. So that membership went, you know, so, and I don't even play around here enough myself. You know, I need to create time to do that. So no mad golf fanatic, but don't mind the game.
And
understand it.
It's a great game when you consider that you have the course here, the pitch and putt, and then you have the course over there in Yarn. And, you know, there's a lot of great nearby attractions as well, you know, when you study. Every time even I come over here, Michael, I get this, you know, I feel lucky, to be honest, to come from this part of Donegal. Because when you come over here to Yarn and you see Port New, and then you come on round and, you know, you have the likes of beautiful places. Like, you come round at Ardra, as you go on further here from Sandfield in Ardra. There's so many nice places.
There is, and you're right. You know, you as a local, you say you feel, you know, honoured to be a part of it. And, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the big places and down the country and stuff like this. But I think what COVID did for probably the county is that a lot of people discovered it.
Yeah.
A lot of Irish people discovered it, you know, and it's fantastic. I mean, look at the beaches. If you had the sun to go with the beaches, who'd be going to Spain? Well, the beaches in Spain are rubbish. Yeah. I think the beaches you'd compare to, Caribbean. Fairness, the sand's lovely. You know, Nyan, Port New Golf Club down there, the guy down there, he's putting a lot of effort and thing into that. And, you know, and again, he got snookered by COVID in the sense that he was looking for, you know, I think a lot of the tourists and American customer and stuff like that, you know, and they've done a really big job down there, a lot of work gone into it. And hopefully that pays off for him now. And you know, and good on him. Sleeve League.
That's right.
You know, just some of the places, and as I say, Ardra, the town of festivals, and long may it be. And you know, there's always something going on and something to do. And when you look at the area and you think, well, yeah, there is. There's a fair bit to do it. You know, there's no reason not to be bored, or if you're a tourist, not to be seeing things. You know,
that's right. There's so much to take in, and it all leads into one leads into another. And
yes.
That's certainly the case. And then you've got Nyarn Beach over there, which I just walked there last Sunday, and it's just
fantastic.
Whether it's my first time walking it or my 20th, I get the same feeling. It's you feel blessed, to be honest.
You do, and you know, it's just so big, open, and you know, such a nice place to walk on, and you know, you can look around and you probably see something new each time. Because it's just a beautiful area. It is fantastic, and. You know, blessed, as you say, to be here.
You know, I know you've talked about the course there, Michael, and in great depth. And I suppose just if you had to pitch the course to somebody coming from outside the area that has never been to the course before, how would you sum it up in a brief summary? Because you've talked about it there in depth, but just to give a brief summary to somebody, it's a great place to come for an hour and a half, but you can put it into better words than I can.
Well, I mean, that's the challenge. I think we've talked about, you know, 6-year-olds playing the course and getting it holes in one, and we've talked about, you know, sort of regular pitch and putters that play down the country on more open field things, and then saying it's a challenge. What I would say, I think we've experienced, and we've had people come here and say, I've lived here forever and a day, and I knew you were there, but first time I've been. And we try and dig into why is that the first time you've ever been. And I think it's probably because people, when they see pitch and putt, they probably don't understand what it is.
Yeah.
And ultimately, Sandfield here is ultimately a golf game. You know, it's a game of golf with the big hit taken out. You know, this is all about really short game. Longest hole on the course here is 60 metres. Most are around 35, 40. So everybody can play it. And yet the course remains challenging, but it's not something to be frightened of.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say to people is, give it a go.
Yeah.
Just come. just come, you know, and we sort of reach out to some of the schools, all the local schools, and quite a lot of the schools will bring transition year students here, and you'll get groups of 20 and 30 come in. So we like to support that and do that. But what we find out the back of that is that then they'll come back as a family.
That's it, yeah.
And they'll say the same. Well, you know, we never thought of coming, or we didn't think it was for us. But, you know, whether you're good at golf or bad at golf, I think one of the great joys is hearing the shouts and the joys. And when somebody hits a good shot or gets a hold of one, you know, you can hear it reverberate on the course, and the laughter. Yeah. There's other sides. There's when you hit a bad shot, there's a bit of cursing goes on. But, you know, just hearing people enjoying themselves. And
experience.
What I would, you know, as I say, finding the words to encourage people to come would be, give it a go.
Yeah.
Just give it a go. Come and give it a go. It, you know, it's not going to break the bank. If you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, you don't like it. If not, you can wait maybe a couple of your 3 years maybe, and then we'll give you something like a mini golf to play on, which everybody can play.
Yeah.
You know, so that's ultimately filling that gap. And I think the addition of that, if we get that, then people won't be feared of coming. Because I think there's just a bit of an uncertainty. Is golf for certain type of people? Mm-hmm. It's not. It's for everybody.
And
if you see the, you know, the range of people that we get here is fantastic, and the support we get from the local community is great.
Yeah,
you know,
and hope that long may it continue. The final, before I finish off the interview, Michael, I just want to say to you that obviously I've met you a few times when I've been over here, but it strikes me like you're quite a determined character, because you've come into this course an unprecedented time for the country and the world, really, in the middle of a pandemic, and you're still here. You know what I mean? You're still going forward with plans, and when somebody else might have said, to heck with it, you know, so that tells me you're quite a determined character.
Yeah, it is. It's like when Sean Connerton first built this place. I'm sure there was people that looked and said, "What's going on there? That'll never fly." You know, and us coming on the back of COVID, one of the big things is that the following year, when all the restrictions were lifted, there'd be nobody around.
Yeah.
But what we see is the local support. So, you know, it has its core. It's core fun, you know, people that live in and around the towns, and what, 25, 35 radius, you know, Dunlow, Donegal Town, Killybegs, you know, Glentys, people come from. And the kids, you know, I can remember one year we had, was it the second year? Four young fellas come up on the bikes. And, you know, I said, where are you from? Oh, we've cycled from Dunlow.
Yeah.
Now, you know, that's just fantastic. It's really fantastic. But then you put on top of that, you know, tourists that come, whether they're people with holiday homes or caravans or whatever it is, or whether it's first-time tourists or people from down the country. And that's what we're seeing, you know, what COVID has brought. So whereas you could look at it and say, all that trade will go away because they'll be back off to Spain and Maldives or wherever, that it's not. People have found something and they've stuck. And when people find us, they're amazed. So, you know, as I say, some people say, we've lived here for years and this is the first time we've been here. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I've not been before.
Yeah. It's on our doorstep.
Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes the things around you,
that's right,
you don't go to, you don't see, you don't do it. It's like the beaches.
Yeah.
How many people have said, keep threatening to go to the beach and have a walk on the beach when it's lovely, and never do because there's something else to do, or there's something else.
Yeah.
And you've got all this wonderful countryside and features.
And COVID changed that to a degree.
It sure did. And therefore, you know, rather than thinking everything's going to go away, and we've watched the numbers, you know, it's an important part of what we do going forward, and how much can you invest in the place. You know, we're seeing people are about, and there's different people. And then, you know, you'll say, what happened to them people we saw last year for about five or six times? And they've not been this year. I don't know what's happened to them, but somebody then comes in and replaces them. And so you have this whole turnover, and people's lives are forever moving and changing. But there's something solid and concrete about this place that brings people back.
Yeah, definitely so. If you come here and, as you say, give it a go, I think that there's a very strong likelihood that you will come back. It is firm. But Michael, I want to round off the interview and by just saying that it's been a great pleasure coming over here at any point, but coming over here to interview you, and I would like to thank you so much for speaking so openly about your how you came to own this beautiful piece of property with your family, and well done and congratulations for all the work you're doing, and I would like to wish you and your family all the very best for the future, because it sounds to me like you have very exciting plans.
Well, listen, thank you very much, and it's good to be number 80 on the list, and that's right. I hope you get the 100 soon. And it's been a pleasure. Nice to meeting you, and both on the course and here now. Get to know you a bit better, and enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, Michael. I thoroughly enjoyed it myself, and I'll say all the very best to you, and take care.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, folks, there you have it. That was episode number 80 with Mr. Michael Allsop, and from Sandfield Pitch and Putt. And I hope that you did enjoy it wherever you're listening in the world. Episode number 80. And as I say, a big thanks to Michael for his time over the last hour. And I hope wherever you were that you enjoyed it. And again, if you want to check out for older podcast episodes, go to thetimeoutpodcast.ie and you'll see a full list of stuff there. So, for now, folks, until episode 81, which will be coming up shortly in the next number of weeks, it's goodbye from me, Tony McGettigan.
For more on the Time Out Podcast, visit thetimeoutpodcast.ie. Thanks for listening.